Hi, everybody. Right, today I want to share a few things that happen in my life that make me who I am and why I do the things the way I do them. A few of you already know how I think and my view of things and my convictions. What I'd like to talk about all starts around me wondering and trying to find out what is God's purpose for me. And what I have to say and is no way trying to put anybody on a pedestal, but to show how good God is and how God has saved me in the things that have happened. So I'll just give you a basic outline, a bit of a history of the family and the background where I'll share a few of my stories. As you know, I was born in Zimbabwe. I grew up on a farm, went to college, got my diploma in agriculture with distinctions in farm management and engineering. While I was at college, I bought a farm, 6,000 acres, just a small little place, around the back. So a few of my stories have come from there. And then I'd like to speak about my dad. And I say again, it's not putting anybody on a pedestal, it's not making anybody great. But it's just to show that how God works and what he does, what we see and what we don't even see that he does for us to fulfill his will. So my father came out of school. He was an apprentice mechanic, diesel mechanic, for the company called Barlow's. While he was doing his apprenticeship, he was called to do his national service as the then Rhodesia was at war after declaring a unilateral declaration of independence from British rule. He ended up in the elite Rhodesian Light Infantry, 1st Commando. After his national service, he went to work for Barlow's and was transferred to Botswana as a service mechanic for a road construction company and a machine mechanic on the Orapa gold diamond mines. He returned to Zimbabwe after about 2.5 years and went to work for the government department CMED, which is the transport side, Then he opened, after he worked for CMD, he opened his own garage and fuel station. While he was running his own workshop, he was called back into the army to the Guard Force, which was started in 1975 as a fourth arm to the Rhodesian Security Forces as a counterinsurgency measure to protect the non-combatant in Zimbabwe. So that was farm protection, anti-stock theft, and to help the police out as an arm of the security forces. He was stationed in our hometown Gweru, and the lower Gweru area, which was the tribal trust land type area. That's where he was kind of stationed and worked from there. He earned his reputation in that area because from this area, most of our workforce came from, and he earned a reputation as a fearful man who could not be harmed by bullets fired at him, especially when he would stand up, and while they were firing at him with his gun, he would walk forward and shooting with traces flying everywhere, and he just couldn't kill this bloke. So he ended up with a good reputation from there. And then after that, he'd walk 80 to 90 kilometers in the night to get back to where he was stationed. But at the same time, he was a mechanic and he came out of the army, he ended up buying his farm in about 1983, which is just a house with a big back garden of about 170 acres. And this is where I grew up, and this is how I started farming. We did cattle, a few cattle, and 500 or so. And we did flowers. We used to export them to Holland. So during my college years, I was also helped with my dad, bought the 6,000 acre farm to share with my brother. Unfortunately, we had to give it back, hand it back over to the Zimbabwean government without any payment. Now I'm here standing in front of you today. Now for a few stories where I'm thankful to God for saving me through the things I've experienced and been through, and also thankful for the things God saves me from or don't even know about, because God's really dealt with them. So my first story happened at this. I'll just go back a bit. The time we bought our farm, my grandfather bought a farm in on the other opposite side of the village of our town, and that was also just a small place of about 10,000 acres, which was actually three farms together. So basically, there was two farms at the top and one at the bottom, and the main farm where the farmhouse was in the middle, kind of thing. So what happened one day is we used to go to the farm every time. We were always there. We were always every weekend, even the week during school, because we loved going to this place. And there was hunting to do, and it was just a very wild, expansive place to enjoy. And my dad had most of his cattle there because I was just a small place for the flowers. So one day during the week, in about 86, this is when, after Zimbabwe had got independence and was now, Zimbabwe became, Rhodesia became Zimbabwe, then all the government had settled and everything like that, and then they bought these places. But after, in about 86, they had freedom fighters, people from the government and Mugabe's tribe, they were trying to get back farms and kill white people, and it was just a whole mess. So in that period, there was quite a few farmers shot. And my granddad and my dad went to the farm. My dad was in the truck because they were collecting cattle, because obviously my granddad also had a butchery, so he used to supply meat to the butcher shop. They went out to the farm, and they were on the main property where the main dip tank was and all that, and they were dosing cattle, whatever they were doing, or dipping them. And they finished from there, and my granddad was in the land, in my little Land Rover Short Tour base, and my dad was in the truck. And obviously, because of the trouble that we had, we all had weapons, and they were all automatic weapons and all that that we had to carry around with us. So one day, they did the cattle, and then they were going to my dad's side of the farm. And my granddad went first with a Land Rover, and my dad was followed in the truck. So because he didn't go in the dust, so we let him go. Well, my dad let him go. And when he was approaching the gate to my dad's section of the farm, my granddad saw policemen, and then they just opened fire on him. And there was 172, we counted the bullets going into the vehicle, 172 bullets going in. That's not where the bullets went through the vehicle or did any damage, or just the penetrating ones. So that's not including the windows, because we don't know how many bullets came through. But my granddad, obviously, because we're used to carrying weapons, my granddad leant over to pick up the gun, and he was shot through the chest, through the arm, and lost his arm. And he was shot in the head a couple of times, but just skimmed his head and shot in the backside through the Land Rover, just from bullets coming through. So, again, what he realized was he only had the webbing, which was with the ammunition, and it was in the Land Rover. My dad came up, and obviously hearing the shots, and he came around the corner, and he had the rifle, he had the automatic weapon with him. And he jumped out the truck, and he realized he's only got one magazine, and he didn't know how many bullets were in that magazine. And there were 13 of them that they'd counted, that my dad just managed to count. And I think because of the reputation my dad had got from the people around the area, he just managed to fire three or four rounds, because he didn't know how many he had. And they all took off. They all left him. And so my dad picked up my granddad, took him to hospital where they had to chop his arm off because it broke all the bone, just hanging on a bit of skin. So it makes me wonder, just from that, where were we that day? Why weren't we on the farm that day? What? God saved us. God saved my granddad because he's not dead, he's still alive to this day, when I'm abandoned he is. But it's just one of the stories that you just think, what's God done for us? And that's the things we can see. Now, to that same farm, a bit of time after that, we used to have our own trucks as well. We had four lorries that used to carry cattle. And my dad bought some cattle from a town up north, and that was 1,200 wieners to bring back to the farm. And through that, we had to go with my dad to pick up these cows because it took many days of, because you could put like 25 in a truck at a time, and so other trucks were doing other jobs and all that. So we just carried on. And our cattle trucks weren't like the ones you can see here. They were just the rig, and we had just a cage around on the inside with bars so you could see the cattle in them. And then we had the trailer at the back. And because it's Africa and we do what we do and there's no real law there, whatever. You see, we were on the back of the truck, right at the back on the frame. We used to have two planks going across so that we could have somebody sitting on there watching the front cattle and watching the back cattle, and if they fell over or stopped the truck or whatever. And I was sitting on the top of this, on this corner, and I was on the left, on the right-hand side of the truck, and we were going down the road, on a dirt road. And just before the grid to get onto the farm, the truck hit, because it was after the rainy period, there were three trucks already gone past, and they had broken the ground. And where we came with our truck, it went into the ground, and I was on the top side in the cattle, and I fell through the cattle into the cage and bounced out. I don't know how I ended up, but I ran out, and I hurt my back a bit. But I was saved again, because that could have been such a dangerous thing, falling from that height and into the cattle stampede. That's another story, that God saved me. Then, so that was two stories from that farm. Then we used to go fishing in Botswana as well, with my granddad and my dad and all that. And we used to go to Moun. It was like a river to the Okavango. And there was a couple there with their son, and they were providing aid. They were at a shop, and they'd get all the aid in to feed the people in Botswana. It was in a town just before Moun. And we'd go fishing there, and they had a house, and their house was on the river, and the lawn went right down onto the river, so it was right to the river edge. And they used to feed little fish. There used to be lots of thousand little sardine type fish on the river. And remember, we used to camp around the corner from there, so we couldn't see the house. It was quite a way, probably half a K, 600 meters away around the corner. We used to camp there. And I'd borrow a canoe from these people. And my dad went fishing out. We used to fish on big rafts and stuff and catch bream, which is our kind of the fish that we eat there. And they went out fishing, and it was just myself, and I was probably about 13, 14 at that time. And I had my brother, who was four, five, and my sister, who was two, maybe. And I got in the canoe. It was a long racing, it was a really narrow, thin racing canoe. And we were in there, and we just rang along, came around the corner, saw the house, heard of the house, came up, drove up onto the road, went up onto the bank, and the bloke, the son, came running out of the house, and he grabbed my sister and my brother, pulled us out, and he shot the crocodile that was following us. And this crocodile came out the water spinning, as crocodiles do. If the crocodile hit that boat, I don't think any of us would have survived. I might have, but my brother and sister couldn't swim. If they took me, they would have drowned. Or they'd take one of them or two of them, I don't know. But God saved me, and you just wonder what this is about. Then when I got a bit older, I thought I'd be a bit wild and reckless. And without telling my folks and all that, my friend of mine came around with his car, and we were going to go to Nyanga, which was on the eastern side of Zimbabwe. We were going to go up to Nyanga for New Year's. So we got the Audi, and we went from Gweru to going towards Nyanga. And the place that we passed, just a bit of relevance, the place that we passed is the same as Nanda village, is where Tony Stone and Josh, is it? Where they go and do their evangelistic work. So it's on that same road. We're going up quite a while, and then they also spoke about the Liebenbergs, which is the people that owned the farm just after that. And we were going past their farm, and I was sitting in the Audi in the back corner, and I was on the left-hand side again. I don't know why I was on the left-hand side. I was sitting up, and then I thought, I'm just going to relax, and we had the music going. I lay down on the back seat, and I had my feet out the window. I thought, yeah, okay. And I just don't know what happened, but I thought, this is a bit cold now. So, cold in Africa? No, it must be, but I don't know what it was. But I put my legs in, and the car rolled. I had my eyes closed and the car rolled. And where I was sitting, if I hadn't moved down or put my legs out, that whole side was crushed down, flat. God save me again. On that same road, probably about a year later, we'd rented a farm and we put our few cattle there, so probably about 100 kilometers from where our home farm was, our big garden. And I was driving the truck. I just passed my truck license, and I had the trucks in there. I took some trucks out. I took some cattle out, and I came back down that road. And where the it was quite a hilly place, and where the road was, that we make good roads in Africa, wide roads that people can drive without having to hit somebody else. But the roads were quite curved, and where they cut through the mountains and stuff. And there were big culverts from the water to get from one side to the other. So it's probably the size of the truck, maybe, the culvert. And they're big, and they were higher than the truck, where they'd put these things. And I was coming back, and it was dark. And I used to smoke. For a few years I did. And I thought I was quite tough, you know. And I used to wear shorts. And the window was a bit open, and I took the cigarette, and I flicked it out the window. And it hit the window and came between my legs. So I was standing flicking the thing, and I went off the road, and I thought, oh, that'll be okay. And I pulled up on the ground, and I was right down the valley, the edge of the road. And I had a look that the trailer was still on, and everything was okay, because it was a bit of a shake. And then I came up the road, and every kilometre in Zimbabwe, every half kilometre is marked by road pegs. So I came up and I looked, 81.5 kilometers, and I went, okay, I want to see what happened. Went back home. The next day, bought trucks past. I looked at the 81 kilometers, and we had gone over. There was no tracks on anywhere, but I'd gone over one of these culverts. I don't know how it happened, but that's what happened. And to this day, I just think, God save me again. So I went to, while I was at college, we bought the farm, and just after I came out of college, we had bought this farm. It was a long farm. It was probably 8 kilometers long, and the widest point was probably 1.7 kilometers. And what it was two brothers had bought this place, and they had split up. So what they'd done, they divided the farm up, and they put a corridor right down the middle. So when we bought the farm for cattle, it was quite good to have this corridor, and we had the dip tank right at the top. And all we'd do is take the cattle down, put them into each paddock where they would go. And we just come back and use the corridor as their walkway. In the middle of the farm, there was a river going across it. And because we're doing flowers, we had a bit of flowers in the river. And it was in about 2000 when Zimbabwe came in, like with all the war veterans coming up and all the trouble started in Zimbabwe again with Mugabe doing what he had to do. We weren't allowed to carry weapons or anything, but we went to the farm one day, and we had the foreman on the back of the truck. We were driving down, and we saw these two guys with axes. So my dad stopped, took the axes off them, said, "If we can't carry weapons, you can't carry weapons." Threw them in the back of the truck, tried to give them anyway, but they took off. So we went to the flowers, and then we came back out again, and we went down the road to the river, and we turned left just to go and have a look, because on the river there was a lake at the end, and they were taking all the stuff out the house. They took all the roofs off, the door frames, the window, and they were using the stuff along the river to make their shanty towns. And they didn't want to be there, but they were forced to be there by the government. So we went into that camp. We went along the river, saw all these things, and it was not very good. Went around the whole camp, because around all our camps we had fire breaks, so we could drive all the way around the paddocks. And we went around the field, came back, got to the gate again to go back on the corridor, and it was tied with barbed wire. So the foreman jumped out, cut the wire, we went through the gate, closed the gate, and as soon as we went onto that road, where the river is, there was big bushes, and there was, I don't know how many people, hundreds of people there. And if we'd been a minute later, they would have stopped us at the gate and we wouldn't have been able to get out. So we went onto the road, and they came through the river. There wasn't hardly any water in it, but they came through, and they started going, and carried on. And my dad, we didn't have any weapons. We didn't have any protection. My dad just put his hand in his pocket, and they wouldn't come close to him, 30 meters away. And you just think, why? Why wouldn't they come? And because of my dad's reputation, because of they knew him, I know the one of the foremen used to say, when my dad's moustache goes like this, it's big trouble. But they knew what. So, cut hand pocket, and we told him to get out and got back in the truck again, left them, went home. So God's worked, God's worked what we can see and what we don't see. What he's done before in the past 4 years, that's what he's done. The last story I'll go through is the same place. The next day, I went back to the farm, and I went to the flowers, and the grass was high, very high, and we just had to see the block of flowers in the grass. We couldn't see anything. We went down. I was looking for. We used to have a bloke called Hygiene, and we said Hygiene. I saw Hygiene. I said Hygiene, where's Bulalani? He was our foreman, and he said, boss, they've taken him to the corridor and they're going to kill him. So I was with the manager. He was in the middle, and we had a policeman there. And the only reason why the policeman was on our side was because I had a little Mini, and he wanted the Mini, and it was all in pieces, but he wanted that car. So anyway, I brought him to the farm and said, listen, you need to come. Well, why we went to the farm is because I wanted him to show him all the stuff down the river, what that and the theft, and just because we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know if we'd get anything back. So anyway, we came around, we raced off down, went around the corner, and there was just hundreds of them around. And they were all dancing around the car, and they pulled us out the car, and they looked for weapons, and they were doing their Pambelines, ZANU-PF, and Mugabe, which is forward with Mugabe, their war cries. And if the policeman wasn't there that day to calm them down and to speak their language, what would have happened? God saved us again. Down the road, from the corridor, coming down the road, we could see the leader of that group. And when he came up, his eyes were so red and angry. And if it wasn't for that copper, as I say, what would have happened to us? So these are some of the things I can see God saving me. So what is my purpose? Why has he done that? While looking for answers, I came across a sermon which is very helpful to me. So I came across the sermon of a preacher through an incident where he was robbed at gunpoint, did most of what most of us would do, and was trying to barter with God. He said, God, if you save me, I'll spend the rest of my life trying to tell people how good you are. God, if you save me, then I'll let you use me however you will. And it worked. He prayed. God saved him. He started to get opportunities to be used by God. He then thought that if he was getting used by God, it must mean that God is pleased with him. It was only when he took a sabbatical after 4.5 years that he was part of a church that didn't have to do anything. On his first morning, he sat down with his Bible to pray. He found out he didn't have anything to pray about. He didn't have to pray and ask God to help him with a sermon, or ask God how to help him counsel somebody. He realized that his busyness, his quest for being useful, blinded him from the blight of his own soul. He'd been useful to God, but he was very far from God. I've always wondered about my purpose for God, what my purpose is for God. I always wanted to be used by God in a great way, but what I've learned is that I need not to focus trying to find out what my purpose is for God. I must not make my usefulness my goal, my North Star. I must not equate my usefulness to God's approval. I was going to read Matthew 7, verse 21. The heading says, I never knew you. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Aiming for usefulness is a terrible North Star. And we have to be careful not to aim for usefulness at the expense of a relationship with God. And Matthew 7, verse 21 tells us that there are very useful people in hell right now. I'd like to go through the life of Samson, where we'll see a picture of a man who is incredibly useful, but increasingly sinful. I want to concentrate mainly on his usefulness and his purpose, but I'll go through the whole lot. Samson is extremely useful, but it's not an example we should follow. And it's only after we look at his life and see the contrast with the life of Jesus that we get our direction where we should head in. So I'm just going to go to Judges and read about Samson. We look at why it all came about, and as I've learned that this happened six times in Judges, where God's had to save his people. So it's the birth of Samson. Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. We look at the birth of Samson and we'll see why useful is not a good indicator of God's approval. In Judges 13, verse 2-3. Now there was a certain man from Zorah of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, Indeed now you are barren and have borne no children. But you shall conceive and bear a son. Finish that. Now, therefore, please be careful not to drink wine or similar drink, and not to eat anything unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. The first reason why usefulness makes a terrible North Star is because God predetermines our usefulness. It's not earned. It's not a reward. It's not a gift for faithful labor and work. It's not a reward for godliness, as if you were more godly, you would do greater things. But our God, that is control of all our steps before we were born, predetermines our usefulness and how it is that we will serve him. Which means this: regardless of how hard we work or how hard you try, God already knows what your purpose is. Samson was chosen for this work before he was conceived. God had determined that he would save the people of Israel through him. So imagine how foolish it would be for somebody else, to come and think that they could get his job by trying to work harder or being more faithful towards God. We do this all the time. We live lives as if God hasn't predetermined the way we're going to be useful, trying to find what our purpose is. Do you know the difference between you and Samson as it relates to God predetermining our usefulness? Is that Samson's usefulness was explicitly told to his mom and yours wasn't. God knows the end from the beginning, so we just need to relax. We can be faithful and do what God has called us to do and know that at the end of the day, God's going to bring what God's going to bring. God predetermines our usefulness. That's why usefulness is a terrible North Star. We see this in his birth. But the craziest thing, as we move from his birth to his life, and what we see that Samson's life is increasingly sinful, but increasingly youthful. And as I've explained, this blows up all our paradigms towards our usefulness, of our usefulness towards God. God had determined what he was going to do. Samson was the only judge who knew from his childhood that it was God would have him do. He knew what God would have him do. And look at how his life starts off. Samson disregards what God says and lives for his own delight, and he's intent on trying to get this wife. Judges 14, verse 1 and 2. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I've seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife. Samson's parents oppose him. But Samson moved past opposition and tells his mom and dad to get her for me. In Judges 14, verse 3. Then his father and mother said to him, "Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" And Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she pleases me well." And through Samson's sinfulness, God brings out his usefulness. And that's in 14 verse 4. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. So therefore he used his sinfulness to get this woman out of his tribe to start what God had to do. I'll go through the rest of the story briefly, but I just want to draw your attention to the points where we see Samson being empowered by the Spirit of God. On his way down to disobey God and marry someone he shouldn't marry, he gets attacked by a lion on his way down to sin. Judges 14, verse 5. So Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Now to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him and tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Samson goes down to get his wife he shouldn't get, gets ready to get married. He has this groomsman, tells them the riddle for this bet, and they go and grill his wife and make his wife tell them the answer to the riddle. So in this instance of rage and anger, Samson goes down to murder these guys, and in the midst of going down to murder these guys, we look at Samson 14, verse 19. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ascalon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, and gave the changes of clothing to those who had explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went back up to his father's house. And then, as I say, the rest plays out like a kung fu movie. They get mad at him. Samson comes through, burns their crops. They kill his wife and father-in-law. Samson gets mad and upset. And then what takes place is the people who are supposed to trust this guy, deliver for them, they turn him over to the enemy. And we look at Judges 15, verse 14. When they came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon them, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it, and he killed 1,000 men with it. Samson is headed to sin every time. Samson is heading to sin every time. When Samson every time that some sin is headed to do something wrong, he gets empowered by God and becomes increasingly useful. And we see this life of the life that Samson lived spiraling out of control as he meets Delilah, who does the same thing that his first wife did, and she does it three times. And when we walk by sight, and when we're gripped by what we see, we're blinded to obvious spiritual dangers that lie in our path. And here's one of the saddest verses that we see in the Bible, and it's in Judges 16, verse 19. Then she lulled him to sleep on her knees, and called for him for a man, and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." So he woke from his sleep and said, "I will go out as before at other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. And here at the end of his story, we see God's grace in a few ways. The very first one is this: patience. This should have happened to Samson a long time ago, but patience led him to repentance. God's been patient with all of us. All of us here. Don't let it harden your heart just because you're being useful. God's grace is seen by the way that he prunes him, and the Philistine seized him and gouged out his eyes. The one thing in the story that constantly leads him into sin is his eyes. He saw his sword and he wanted. God allows him to have this pain so that the very thing that would lead him into sin wouldn't handicap him anymore. All the pain that we experience in our life may not be punitive. It may be God's protection on us. It brings weight when Christ tells you that when your eyes lead you to sin, gouge them out. And then lastly, God's grace is seen in 16 verse 22. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. This is a promise of hope. It's promising there's hope here. I'll read the whole lot. By the hair of his head began to grow, and after being shaved, promising hope. There's nobody, there's no situation, there's no one in this room, and there's no one that we witness to outside of God's grasp. There is no one outside of God's grasp. There is no life that is unsalvageable. As sure as God is patient and he prunes us, there is hope. Two times in Judges, in this book, we see that the man was incredibly useful towards God, but look how he prays. Firstly, look how he prays here after he killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey in Judges 15, verse 18. After he had killed all these men, then he became very thirsty. So he cried to the Lord and said, "You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised?" The first time we see this mighty man pray of God, we see him pray towards God, and he prays in an entitled manner, asking God for things. And what does God do? God gives him water. This is a man that is being used by God in a great way, and it's turning his focus off of what God would have him do onto the fact that he is being used by God. Then at his death, he said to God, "Give me strength so that I can fill your will here." But look what he prays for. And this is the second time we see him pray in Judges 16, verses 28 to 30. Then Samson called to the Lord, saying, "O Lord God, remember me. I pray, strengthen me. I pray just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on his right hand and the other on his left. Then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pushed with all of his might, and the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead that he had killed in his death were more than he had killed in his life. Even at the end of his life, God had humbled him. After God has humbled him and brought him low, he's praying for vengeance. And what do you know? God grants him his request. God uses Samson to do what God says he was going to do at the start of his life. So at the end of his life, if we want to judge Samson's success on how useful he was, then he was successful. But nobody would read the story and call him a success, even though he was useful. Usefulness is a terrible North Star. But you know what happens 1,000 years later when God's people are once again in bondage to an enemy that can't be destroyed by pillars? God comes to a young girl and tells this young girl that she's going to have a son that's going to save his people from sin. Much like Samson, but Christ's life was completely different from his. While Samson left his mother's house to chase skirts, Jesus was in his father's house preparing for his work. While Samson was eating honey that was unclean and giving it back to his mom and dad, making the clean unclean, Jesus spent his life making the clean unclean clean. While Samson is chasing prostitutes, Jesus is setting prostitutes free. While Samson walked by sight, Jesus is telling all of us who are walking by sight to pluck out our eyes. While Samson was productive, God looked down at Jesus and said, "This is my son, who is not just productive, but in whom I am well pleased." And in their death, both of them betrayed by somebody that was close enough to give them a kiss with arms outstretched, Samson was praying that God would give him the strength for vengeance. But Jesus was praying that God would provide forgiveness for all of us that should be in the grave right now and should stay there. Jesus didn't chase productivity. Jesus didn't chase usefulness. Do you know what he aimed for? Faithfulness. He aimed for God's pleasure. We live in a world that's going to praise us. They'll praise you for all the great things you do. And what a tragedy it would be for us to have our names in the history books, but to have our names omitted from the Lamb's Book of Life. Usefulness makes a terrible North Star because it can be had at the expense of a relationship with Jesus. But if we follow Jesus, that is the one way, the truth, the life, and we aim for faithfulness, then regardless of what we get as a result of the things we do, we could have confidence that this is what God has ordained for us. These are good works that he already prepared for us to walk in beforehand. I pray that you would rearrange your North Star. I pray that you would aim for faithfulness. I pray that you would aim for God's pleasure. And as we aim for God's faithfulness and God's pleasure, he'll provide for us as he sees fit. Could I just pray after that, please? Father, once again, we are grateful that you have determined the ways in which we were used by you, even in our failures and in our sins. You can take the mess we make of our lives and produce something fruitful and good. I pray that we stop trying to live for the glory of our gain or wondering about the reasons you made us, but that our hope would be in you. Father, I pray that you'll just give us faithfulness and trust in you. Amen.